Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, March 27, 2017. Six aid workers are ambushed and killed in South Sudan.
It will make aid workers really think about where they're going and where they're working. And the potential impact then is that some populations, their needs might not be met if aid workers decide it's unsafe to go to those areas.
And the African Union chairperson condemns the attack on aid workers.
We strongly condemn and denounce the killing of the six humanitarian actors who have come here to help the people, and yet they have been killed. So we are appealing to the government and to all the stakeholders, the actors, so that they protect these humanitarian actors.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Six aid workers were attacked and killed over the weekend while traveling from Juba to Pibor. The head of the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, also known as OCHA, says the killings show that the South Sudan government's reported commitment to protect humanitarian workers is not a reality on the ground. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
The UN mission in South Sudan says the aid workers were ambushed Saturday while traveling in a government-controlled area on the Juba-Pibor road. Their bodies were found on the road by other members of the same convoy who were traveling a distance behind the first vehicle. UN OCHA Chief Ian Ridley says Saturday's attack, the deadliest attack on humanitarian workers since the conflict began, will affect the delivery of aid to millions of people needing assistance across the country.
So it will make aid workers really think about where they're going and where they're working. And the potential impact then is that some populations, their needs might not be met if aid workers decide it's unsafe to go to those areas.
David Shearer, special representative of the United Nations Secretary General for South Sudan, is urging the South Sudan government to investigate and apprehend the killers. Ridley says UN OCHA regularly holds talks with government officials about the safety and protection of aid workers. He says the government often gives assurance it will guarantee the safety of aid workers. At least 12 aid workers have been killed in South Sudan so far this year. He says Saturday's attack proves the government has not protected aid workers.
The government says that it's doing everything in its power to guarantee the safety and security of aid workers. But what's clear is that outside of Juba, on roads such as the Juba-Pibor road where this incident happened, the government is not able to make those assurances a reality for aid workers.
The UN says 79 aid workers have been killed in South Sudan since the fighting began in 2013, making South Sudan one of the most dangerous places in the world in which to be a humanitarian worker. Ridley is urging the warring parties to cease hostilities to ensure a safe environment for all humanitarians delivering services to people in need.
Aid workers will continue to do the best they can to reach people in need, but this latest incident just is a demonstration of exactly how challenging and dangerous it is for those courageous aid workers to do that.
African Union Commission Chairman Musa Faki Mohamed, who wrapped up a two-day visit in Juba today, says the attack on humanitarian workers at a time when South Sudanese desperately need relief aid is unacceptable. He's speaking in French through a translator. He called on political leaders to protect humanitarians.
Sur le plan humanitaire, je devrais le dire en premier.
We strongly condemn and denounce the killing of the six humanitarian actors who have come here to help the people, and yet they have been killed. So we are appealing to the government and to all the stakeholders, the actors, so that they protect these humanitarian actors who are here to help the victims, to help the people of South Sudan.
UN OCHA officials say it will not make public the names of the six aid workers killed for security reasons. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
A written statement put out by OCHA says Six people died, but today the spokesperson for OCHA confirmed to South Sudan in Focus that a seventh person died in the attack. OCHA is reluctant to describe any details regarding the seventh person. Six of the seven victims work for Grassroots Empowerment and Development Organization, or GREHOD. Jafar Mbugwa is the program director for GREDO. He says the staff members were a mixture of teachers, construction workers, as well as one driver.
What happened is that my team, they were traveling to Kibora. We have an activity carrying out there in partnership with UNICEF. They left on Friday at 3. Then they went and slept in a place called Mangiri. And because it was they were moving in a convoy, because that area you cannot move just alone. You need to have a convoy. After the junction to Pibor from Bor Road, they were told that there are some gunshots which have been heard. Then they stopped to verify the situation. And then we had communicated with our team leader in Pibor to expect the arrival of the rest of the staff in Pibor. They were informed that the bodies of the occupants, all of them, they were killed. There were actually seven bodies, which we have been able to identify. The seventh body was of another Kenyan also.
This seventh Kenyan that you're speaking of, who was he and where did he come from?
He was given a list by my team so that he can be dropped, be picked by the truck of this company. But I think that did not happen. He just decided to proceed with the rest of my team. And that's why he was also killed together with my team.
What company did he work for?
There is a company which has been given a contract there called Capital Base Limited. According to what I've heard, he was just going to look for just manual work of construction.
Who killed your staff?
I can't tell, because when you hear that there are gunshots, and what I don't understand, because that is an area which is under control of the government, so we don't know. Who are they, whether they are bandits or whether, I don't know, I cannot ascertain. But our worry is that because that area is the area which is under control of the government. So we don't understand who are the killers.
Jafar, what was the nationalities of the staff that you lost over the weekend?
The nationality of the staff?
Yes, where were they from?
Three were Kenyans. South Sudanese.
That was Jafar Mbugwa speaking to Ayen Bior from Kapoita earlier today. The leader of the South Sudan Democratic Movement, Cobra Faction, Khalid Bothrus, is blaming government proxy militias stationed at Mangala for attacking the aid workers. He says the attack took place at Bajur village, 15 kilometers from Juba, in an area under the control of South Sudan Army.
This area is on a junction going to Bibor through the desert, and this is an area where there has been ambushes targeting the Merle people. A lot of Merle, especially traders, lost their lives in that area, and the government has not investigated it. I see that the area has militias belonging to Michael Makwe and Defense Minister Kwang Manyang. These militias are made up of youth from Bor. They are the ones attacking the Merle, and right now, they are blocking that route, and their intention is to prevent commercial vehicles from reaching the Merle areas.
That's Khalid Bothrus, leader of the South Sudan Democratic Movement, Cobra Faction. He was speaking with us from Sudan. South Sudan in Focus could not independently confirm the claims made by Khalid Bothrus. South Sudan's government accuses rebels loyal to former first Vice President Riek Machar of killing the 6 aid workers. Atenyuek Ateny, spokesman for the South Sudan president, says the rebels are trying to drive a wedge between the government and international community by committing acts of terrorism. Atenyuek Ateny says the government cannot stop people from reaching their own, stop aid workers from delivering aid to the people who are suffering.
We condemned such act in the strongest term possible, because this is a problem that is not South Sudanese completely, because the relief workers were to deliver food to the needy people who are South Sudanese. So killing them is an act of terrorism by those who have actually killed these humanitarian workers.
Yet, sir, this keeps happening to the point that I think the United Nations is saying that so far this year about 88 workers have been killed. So if you believe this is an act of terrorism and it's irresponsible, who is responsible? Who's doing it?
There's nobody who can do this apart from the rebels. the rebel can do this, just in an attempt to drive the wedge between the government and the international community. Our soldiers cannot attack aid workers. So this is the work of rebels. We have been saying time and again that the pockets of rebels that are operating in South Sudan have now moved to commit crimes similar to that are actually committed by ISIS and other terrorist organizations like Boko Haram. So there's no doubt about that.
The last time we talked, you also blamed the rebels. And so this begs the question whether your country is losing control to the rebels. Because if this keeps happening, are you in control?
No, we are in control. You know, what is happening is that, you know, there are isolated areas that the pocket of rebels are operating between roads, you know, like you have heard, you know, several times that even the civilian targets coming from, you know, Uganda via Numuli or from Yei, you know, to Juba, there have been sporadic attacks by the rebel against the civilian target. So there are rebels who actually take the advantage, the security lapses, and cause havoc. It doesn't mean that we don't control the country.
That's Ateny Wek Ateny, presidential spokesman, speaking with VOA's James Batty. Rebels loyal to Riek Machar are distancing themselves from the attack. Lam Paul Gabriel, who speaks on behalf of the SPLA-IO, told James Batty the attack occurred in an area under the control of the South Sudan Army.
The location there is under the full control of the government forces and their militias, not under our own control. We never reached there. We have not even reached that area yet.
But this does not mean that your group have not been involved in attacking aid workers. Have you been attacking aid workers? Because this has been going on into the fact that the United Nations says about 80 aid workers have been killed so far.
Now, why should we attack people who are helping the community? The government is just making this propaganda because they want to stop these aid workers from coming to our area and offering these services. They have always targeted the aid workers, and at the end they blame it on us. But the truth is, even the UNHCR knows that. Even these aid agents, they know very well that people don't attack aid workers. We get them, we make sure that, okay, we protect them. In our areas, we always protect the aid workers. It's just a complete lie from the government.
The last time the news was that your group was holding certain people and wanted some ransom. Do you seek ransom for people you might be holding?
No, we never seek any ransom for anybody. The last time we held people, especially the aid agency, was not really what they call holding. It was after attack in Mayendi. That was around the 15th of this month. The government attacked our position. We pushed them back. And in the process, these aid workers' agencies belonging to certain NGO, they ran in disarray. So on our way back, we found them, we collected them and brought to our area. The next day, they were handed over to the WAP and they were taken back to the organization where they work. The second incident is here with the issue of the oil workers. The oil workers, there are two Indians and one Pakistani. These people are still with us because our area is not accessible to the government and we cannot release them to the government straight away. We made it very clear. We do not want this oil to be used. We don't want it to be accessed. We don't want whether the government, whether it is the organization, whether it is a company, going to the oil, because this oil is being used to fund this war. They continue fighting. They continue killing civilians instead of helping the people. People are starving. People are dying every single day, but they use that oil to make sure they purchase this ammunition and attack our forces and attack the civilians.
That's Lam Paul Gabriel, SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman. He was speaking with VOA's James Batty earlier today from Kampala. The head of the African Union says he's concerned about South Sudan's failure to implement the peace agreement. He called on the regional international partners to take additional measures to spur implementation of the deal so that the peace returns to South Sudan. Waki Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
Former Foreign Minister of Chad Moussa Faki Mohamed is paying a visit to Juba for the first time since being chosen by the 54-member body to run the AU in late January. He arrived Saturday and traveled to Ganiel, one of the areas in former Unity State hardest hit by the more than three-year-long conflict. Speaking in French, Mohamed says he is frustrated that implementation of the South Sudan peace agreement has been stalled for so long.
The agreement exists, but it is not being implemented. At least it has difficulties in being implemented. The international community as a whole, and particularly the African Union, is trying to do everything so that it can help South Sudan to implement this agreement.
Mohamed did not elaborate on what measures the AU is taking to speed up implementation of the agreement. He says fighting between warring parties continues to exacerbate the efforts to help South Sudanese suffering from hunger and physical abuse. Mohamed describes what he saw in Ganiel.
Mon impression quand j'ai visité le terrain est qu'il y a des populations qui souffrent.
People are suffering. People are suffering from famine. Women and children are victims. And there can be two causes only to the famine. One is the natural phenomenon, that is, you can have natural causes, that is, you can have drought, and therefore you have famine. But the other one is also peace and security element, which is one of the main issues which can worsen the situation that prevails in the country.
Mohamed reminded signatories to the peace agreement that they are the primary implementers of the deal and must abide by the ceasefire and all other aspects of the agreement. South Sudan Cabinet Affairs Minister Elia Lomuro claims the Kiir administration is doing all it can to implement the agreement, but says its hands are tight regarding certain parts of the deal.
So we are hammering in and saying to the people who signed the agreement that we have done everything possible, but financially we are not able to finance fully, particularly Chapter 2. We are going to pay money from April, but it will not be enough to do everything that is necessary to implement Chapter 2.
Chapter 2 of the deal refers to reforms in the national security sector. Specifically, it requires that rebel forces belonging to the SPLM-A in opposition are integrated to the National Army. It also requires that the international community help fund some of those reforms. Lomuro says unless there is a major breakthrough regarding implementation of Chapter 2, little can be achieved on other parts of the deal.
And if you don't reform the security sector, I can tell you the other chapters of the agreement have no meaning.
It has been 19 months since the peace agreement was signed by the warring parties. Very little progress has been achieved since that time. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, how do the people of Torit feel about the national dialogue? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
has social media improved your life, or is it more of a distraction?
Well, it has improved my life, and at the same time, it is a distraction. For example, I get a lot of information from social media, which I wouldn't otherwise have found unless I went out there and actually engaged myself in searching for the information. And at the same time, I'm distracted a lot because I find myself stuck on social media for a lot of hours, which I would have done something more valuable with.
Yeah, it has been a distraction, but it has improved my life more, like communicating with friends all over the world.
It has improved my life a lot, for like me getting to know more people and also get to talk to different people who I don't know as stars.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Women rights activists, lawmakers, and residents of Torit say they doubt a national dialogue will resolve the ongoing fighting in the country. Women activists say if the dialogue is going to succeed, the government must first talk to armed youth. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Torit.
Women in Torit say as much as they want to believe the national dialogue President Salva Kiir announced late last year will bring lasting peace to South Sudan, it will not happen if the armed youth fighting the government are left out of the dialogue. Dozens of women from across Imotongi State gathered at the Women's Center in Torit over the weekend to discuss the role women can play to bring lasting peace and development to the country. Torit resident Dawa Thomas, who took part in the discussion, says the government should first talk to the armed youth and the many rebel groups spread across the country before holding a national dialogue.
Let the government organize and talk to our dear brothers and sisters who are in the booth so that they can understand, and they are supposed to come together and they know what is the root cause. The root cause of the problem that make them to go to the booth, and also the government also to come in and they sit together and they get the solution. Otherwise, And if they are saying that they are supposed to start the dialogue without also convincing them, I think it will not be possible to them.
Imotong State lawmaker Flora Eleha Matia says the government must provide food and shelter to the cantonment sites to attract armed youth willing to report to those areas. She says it is meaningless for the government to name cantonment sites without providing logistical support.
We want government first to talk to dialogue in there. As they were saying that they are going to make cantonment area. You know, when you want peace from somebody, don't just tell somebody that you go there and you will get there. No. First, we asking our partners who are helping us, let them prepare a shelter, prepare water. I think those people, they are ready to come. Some from them, they are ready to come. When they see those things, their food is there, everything, they will come. But the way sometimes our people talk, that let them go. They have been building in the bush, let them build. That one will not give us peace.
Imotong State lawmaker Agnes Locke says dialogue must happen at the grassroots level.
Because the people who are mostly affected are the people at the grassroots. And the people at the grassroots are to be paid attention to better than others. Because if the people at the grassroots, they could understand why the people up there in the national, they are having ups and downs, then they have understood and they apologize, because in a dialogue you always ask for forgiveness and apologize for whatever has happened, and then the people will accept. And I think this national dialogue will solve the problem.
Imotong lawmaker Angela Ajana Pio says the armed youth fought it for the independence of South Sudan, and so they deserve to be part of a national dialogue.
We need the government to dialogue with our sons or brothers or husbands who are outside. Then after that, they come to the town, to the people who are in the town.
Ajana says the guns must first be silenced before any dialogue begins.
This gun has to be put out, then this dialogue has to come. Most of women, they think this dialogue will be the solution to the peace, to bring peace in South Sudan.
Stella Minda, the acting chairperson of Imotong State Civil Society Network, agrees.
We need to identify the places where the people who are having this one, who are heading the armed group here, together with the government. We have really to see together.
Minda says there must be a complete solution to end the conflict once and for all, so that South Sudan's children can live in a country free of violence and bloodshed. A majority of the women at the meeting also argued that South Sudanese women should be prepared to take up leadership roles in the country and to work side by side with men to restore peace across the country. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
We are moving on to Kampala. Despite competition, South Sudanese women in Uganda are starting up a small business that are creating jobs and opportunities for themselves as well as fellow other women. Simon Peter Apiku reports for VOA from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
Most South Sudanese women in the Ugandan capital started off with very little money, but today, as their businesses grow, some are renting out their shops and offering employment and training opportunities to other women. Anesi Espicho, a South Sudanese mother of five who has an embroidery business, proudly shows off some of her products for sale.
I decorate things like bed sheets, table clothes, and even African wear.
Espicho says it wasn't easy starting the business.
I acquired 3 machines, 2 computers, 1 fridge, and it has even sent me back to school.
Espicho now employs 2 other women to handle all the orders coming in from customers. Fellow South Sudanese women like Florence Abrama, a widow and mother of 3, bakes cakes, biscuits, and a South Sudanese favorite type of bread, which has brought her even more customers.
Our people here, especially South Sudanese, they like salt bread. They used to eat with sauce, but really I don't have oven, but I'm trying my best to go somewhere and do it.
Abrama says she plans to use part of her earnings to buy her own oven. Annette Josephine runs hairdressing salons in Kampala. She uses her salon in the Kampala suburb of Luweza as a school to train other women.
I started by plating friends
After plating one or two, they bring their friends also. So that's how I came to be known in
Africa. Josephine says as her small business grows, she hopes to buy modern equipment for the salon, like an electric hair dryer, a new styling chair, and a backwash unit. While his picture and Josephine offer jobs to other South Sudanese and Ugandan women, Abrama says she prefers to work on her own.
I don't trust anyone's help. I don't trust anyone's work. That's what I'm doing. I'm a hard work woman. I work by myself.
And Josephine has some advice for other South Sudanese women who do not have a job.
My partner has no job. In fact, most of the time, he relies on me. So what I advise women who are seated at home, that with time things change. You might have your partner who is looking after you from A up to Z. He provides everything. But you'd never know. Things change.
Josephine says at some point your partner may lose his job and he will need to look after the children while the woman goes out to work. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Jai Su by Pat Thomas. We've been listening to Pat Thomas with the song Jesu, which means stop crying in the local Fente language. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Jesus Christ of Barry as we are.